I'm up here again. This is weird. And I'm not wearing a dress because I actually don't have any winter dresses, so I apologise for that one. Come from Sydney, of course. I put a PowerPoint up there. It's just to, for something to focus on in case I go off track. So I just thought it might be... The writing's a bit small, I apologise, but it's often a way to help me stay on focused. So last week we looked at life-giving relationships, and isn't it great to be in those where people really help you come alive when they're with you? I get given the topic of the life-grating ones, and I'm not quite sure if that's an indication of me or whether David has seen something in the way I interact with people. Hopefully it's that one. So I just want to say up front, it is a difficult topic, and I really hope I don't offend anybody in what I have to say. It's not intended that way. It's just some things I've learned through working with Fusion, which is a Christian organisation that works with young people. And it's interesting, the passage which David picked is actually the passage we have as our, a bit like our Commission of Ministry of Reconciliation. So a lot of our training evolves around how do you work with other people and how do you actually become more self-aware. So we're going to be looking at some of those topics today. It's a huge topic, so I'm going to try and keep it as brief as possible. But if you do want to know more, I've been talking with the ministry team, and they're happy for us to do some, John and I, to do some workshops on some of these things because they are really essential. Most of you might not be aware, but most reasons people leave the mission field is because of conflict with other missionaries. And as you know, we've been talking today about conflict in our society. It's a massive problem. Our relationships with each other are becoming more and more difficult. So it's really important that we ask God to help us in this particular field. So I hope you get something from this today. The three main areas I'm going to be looking at are self-awareness. You know, what is it about ourselves that we need to maybe think about? Also, how do we be more aware of other people and what's maybe going on for them? And then also, how do we reconcile together with other people? They're the kind of three main areas. So next slide, please. This is, what God's showing us when people push our buttons. One of the most interesting things I've discovered is that most people who push your buttons often are very close to you, or that you have a really strong relationship with them. And that's why it's so difficult, because you spend so much time with each other. But it's not always the case. But God has designed us from the very beginning to be in relationships with each other. Isolation is one of the biggest problems. In fact, as you know, if you've done something wrong, you get put in solitary confinement, because it actually really is a punishment not to be able to be with other people. So we need to learn how to be in relationships, but they are very complex. So what I have to say today is to say very broad, but as I said, our button pushers are often close to us, their families or colleagues. And how do we respond to prickly people, I call them? You know, people that sort of say things and somehow something goes off in you and you think, is this just me, or is it that everyone feels this way when something is going? We tend to steer clear of them, because it's hard work to try and be around people who are constantly pushing your buttons. But as Christians, God asks us to be ministers of reconciliation, and how can we do that unless we know how to have some tools to do that sort of thing? So, it's not straightforward. Sometimes we feel powerless too, because some people seem to bring out the worst in us. We also may feel disconnected, or the love in the relationship diminishes, and we lose hope that things will never change. So it can be quite a difficult thing. The other aspect we've got against us, I guess, in our society is that we live in this disposable culture. If things don't work out, well, you just move on. If you find another church, you find another friend, you find something else to do. A lot of our messages I feel we get through media, and that is, oh well, if you don't like it, just move on, don't worry about it. But I don't think that's what God's message is saying to us. Does anyone else think that's true? I think he says something different, don't you? So in saying that, though, we don't want people to stay in dangerous situations either. So you've got to remember, safety is really important. It's kind of another aspect of violence and things. But what we're going to look at is, where does our behaviour come from? And that's a really interesting thing. It's a lot of it is from our past situations. So we're going to look at that little diagram. Next slide, please. Which is, it's going to come up. What's happened to my diagram? my diagram has gone. No, it is that right slide, but it should have a diagram on it. Okay, I wonder what's happened to it. Anyway, he's having a look for me. So the self-concept, this is a diagrammatic thing of how our sense of self is formed, okay? So it's you might not be able to see, he's having a fiddle now, but there's supposed to be a diagram up there that says it's like a sort of blob, an outside, which is a representation of our real self. So we're very fluid and changeable. And there's a little square in the middle with a top to it that's like a house, that says is actually our self-concept, which is a very rigid thing. It's actually how we see everything through our self-concept. So anytime someone says something to us or behaviours we see, we kind of measures it through this filter, if you like, of how we respond to things. And that self-concept, as it said, is actually formed in our first 3 to 5 years of life. So the picture we have of ourselves is actually quite limited and quite old, if you like. And it's obviously mainly influenced by our family and friends. It's how it's maintained by seeing the world the same way. And the problem with this is that if you're always thinking through this old picture... Oh, has it come up? There it is. That's what it's meant to look like. Thank you. Well done. All right. So, yeah, going back to it. So the real self is this kind of huge... As you see the difference in proportion, that's why the diagram's important. So our real self is massive, and there's a lot of it we can't see. But the good news is God can see all of it, so that's really amazing. So the self-concept, as you see, some of it is actually within our real self, so it's true. It's actually who we are. But there's actually a part of it that's actually outside of ourselves, which is an illusion. So if I just come up here and tell you that I'm really good at singing... But you can hear me in church and you're going, "No way, Karen, you're no good at singing." That's my illusion. I think I am, but I'm not really. Do you know what I mean? So there's some things about ourselves that we think which actually aren't true. And that's why we need each other, because that's when people can give you the feedback. And Karen, be quiet, as my daughter would say. Yeah, so there's part of us that is not true, but there's the other part that is. But there's so much more to discover. And often if we're not aware of these sort of things, that we can get really stuck in that self picture. And sometimes it can be good things, some things it can be bad things. This is just a diagrammatic way of trying to explain what goes on inside of us without actually knowing it. That self-concept will stay the same unless we try to change it, unless we actually make a conscious decision that I don't want to be like that, I don't want to behave that way when someone says that. You have to actually make a conscious decision with it. Excuse me a minute. And our real self is fluid and changes with every significant event. So there's some parts of us that will change. The really important thing to remember with this is that we need God to help us see something different. And through prayer and other ways, we can actually find something different. The reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, in that passage it talks about being dying to self and being a new creation. I like to see this as, how do we become a new creation? How do we find out about our real self? And we can do some of that through our own prayer and talking to God about stuff, but a lot of it we need other people. It's actually other people's feedback, and that can actually help us to discover more about ourselves. And one of the really key aspects, which we're going to look at in a minute, is actually listening. So I don't know about you, if you ever had a conversation with someone that really gets quite deep and they really listen to what you've got to say, do you actually discover more about yourself? Hands up anyone that's happened to, where you've had a really great conversation and you go, "Oh, is that what that's about?" That's when we're delving into our real self. That's part of us that we weren't aware of, but is actually there. Am I making sense to people? Yeah? Okay. It's really, I mean, I could do a whole lecture on this. It's really interesting stuff, but it's an important part of understanding why we respond the way we do. Okay, so each day we need to become a new creation. We need to find out what we can do differently. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so one thing we do need to remember is that we may be someone else's button pusher. Sometimes it's hard to remember or actually admit to that. I'd like to think I wouldn't never push anybody's buttons, but that would be a big lie, because I know I push my husband's buttons for sure. Not intentionally, you just do, yeah. But the thing is, we first have to take the plank out of our own eye, and you'll be able to see more clearly the speck in others. This is the part about become more aware of ourselves. We need to actually look at our behaviour and responses to other people. Is it actually helping and building them up and helping our relationship grow, or are we actually being quite destructive ourselves? Sometimes it's not easy to admit to that, to be honest with you. The other thing, once we've actually done that, we're going to actually look at what's actually really going on here in our relationships with people. Remember, behaviour is caused. Behaviour doesn't just happen. Something is behind it. And I think if you just come away today thinking that behaviour is caused, that I need, and also I need to do something about myself, I'll be happy. Because I always used to think, oh, you know, well, you know, they're just like that. Well, actually, no, there's often something going on underneath. Behaviour is an outward expression of what's happening at the time. So we need to look past that. We need to find out what's been going on in people's lives to understand them better. And as I said before, listening is a really key part of that process. I don't know about you, do you feel that in an average week that people really listen to you? Has anyone got someone that really listens to you? To be honest, most of us would say no. We're so busy, we're so going from next thing to next thing that we actually don't have time to really listen to each other. I tell you, it's the biggest gift you can give someone. I'd rather have someone listen to me for an hour than have $5,000, seriously. I think it's that valuable, a gift to someone else. So listening is really key. And what we mean by listening is actually really reflecting to someone what they're saying, listening to them deeply and affirming them. Actually really helps both of you. You learn about them, so you learn about what's really going on behind behaviour, and you actually learn about yourself in the process. It's a really special thing. The other thing we need to do is also to give what we call life-promoting feedback. I think most of the feedback we tend to give is not very life-promoting. We tend to, you know, feedback can be, you know, body language. It doesn't have to be words. It's, you know, it's the, you know, whatever. You know, everything we do is feedback, you know, so we have to be aware of that. So life-promoting feedback is the type where you know, you're helping the other person be aware of how their behaviour affects you. So, like, when you do this, I feel like this. That sort of statements, I find that really helps. Most of us don't like to give or receive feedback, but in fact, if we're going to grow, if we're going to build into our real self, we need to do that. That's a bit of a challenge, isn't it? The thing to remember, though, is we can't change people. Often I think with our relationships, we think, well, if only they did this differently, if only that happened, if, you know, and we do the blame thing. We all do it. It's not helpful because we can't change someone else. We can only pray for them. We can only work through some of these things together and adjust our own behaviour and thinking. And I'll give you some example of that. I have a friend who... she's someone that really pushes my button. I explain why, and it's actually about my problem when I actually think about it, but at the time it's quite an interesting thing. She's a lady who's not overly well. She's got some health issues. She's quite isolated because all she does when you see her is moan and complain about her health issues. So she's kind of lost a lot of friendships, but I really felt God asking me to continue to catch up with her. So once a week we pray together. So one of the problems was, though, is that as a nurse, I'm very conscious of if she did a few different things then she wouldn't have some of these health problems, okay? So the frustration for me is when I go and listen to her telling me all these woes about blah, 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 I feel like going, well, if you only did this, it would all be okay, you know? And sometimes I'm in a good mood and I can cope with it, and other times I get a little bit frustrated myself, but I've had to learn that if I get frustrated and try and fix things and say, well, if you just did this, you'd probably be better, in a nice way, of course. But if I do that, it actually, she gets really angry and upset with me, even if I give any suggestions. And I just think, well, why are you getting angry and upset with me? I'm only saying that, well, if you did a bit more walking, you wouldn't have so many aches and pains, you know? And it's actually, as we've got to know each other and I've listened to her, I've worked out that in her self-concept, she came out this in a conversation in a totally different time, but she said that she was told by her mum that she was never wanted, and that you know, that she's always in the way and she's a problem. So she comes from a self-concept that I'm not worth anything, and so she, as soon as anyone starts to criticise or give her their opinions about things, she gets very jumpy and thinks, well, you know, I'm not worth anything. And you know, she goes, do you know what I'm saying? So she has this kind of picture, which I didn't know about. Every time I try to give her advice, it actually triggers off stuff in her and she gets angry because that's her only way of defence. Does that make sense? So once I knew that, I thought, oh, okay, no more advice, Karen. It's not helpful, you know. Let's think of another way. So what we did is I noticed that she because she has a lot of time and she's home alone, she's a faithful prayer and she needs something to do to pass the time, really. So I said, okay, why instead of just meeting for prayer, why don't we have an actual Bible study? And if you don't mind, I'm really busy. Can you prepare it for us? And then we come together, we have the Bible study, and then we pray together. And I tell you what, it's totally changed our relationship because she feels like she's doing something helpful, she's preparing it, I haven't got time. We come together, we actually have an amazing time in the Word, which is always great, isn't it? And then at the end, we don't have this whinge time. It's a really helpful time. So I go away feeling, oh, that was great, you know, instead of, oh, I'm so tired, which is what it was before. So just sometimes by changing my perception of what was going on and also giving her an opportunity to do something and have a purpose and, supporting them, it actually made a whole difference. So things like that actually can help us to improve our relationships, to actually look at what's going on for the other person and how can I change my behaviour in that process. Okay, so next one, please. So look at people's strengths. So how do we reconcile? So I'm going to go over time. Okay, now this is always the challenge, isn't it? God asks us to be ministers of reconciliation. So how do we do that? There's lots of different ways. One of them is obviously being good role models and not avoiding conflict. I always think it's interesting. We use a thing called restorative practice in our family, and it's actually a part of a really good reconciliation type process for conflict. And say Fusion use it as their method of doing. And it's actually a very good way because it's not about blame and shame. It's actually about, well, actually what happened? What went wrong? What happened? How did the incident affect you? What have you thought about since it happened and what can you do to make it right? So it's all very data questions. They're not emotive questions. They're not saying, well, you did this wrong. It's like, okay, well, I did this because for this reason. And the other person hears it and they go, oh, okay. Oh, so that's what you were thinking. Oh, okay, I was thinking this. And then at the end of it, they both have to work out what they're going to do to make the situation right. So it's very data orientated. So it gets the emotion out because that's the key thing. It's the emotion that gets in the way when we try stuff. Because we're hurt or we're angry or, any emotion, sad or whatever, it gets in the way of actually reconciling together. So it's actually a little workshop we can do. But one of the things... it's okay to have a different view as well, point of view with people. It's perfectly okay. Like, you know, we all come from different life experiences and different things, and it's just how we share that point of view is important, not putting ourselves across at somebody else, okay? I'll give you some biblical examples in a minute because there's some amazing things that God has done. Obviously, prayer and forgiveness is always helpful. If you're in the moment and it's really hard, I always say a prayer or I come back to the situation when I'm actually a bit calmer about it and actually thought about it a bit more. And forgiveness is huge. Some of the things that people have said to me over the years, you wouldn't want to hear them, but, you know, people say, how can you possibly forgive that person for saying that to you? And it's actually because I realised as I thought about it is that they were really hurting at the time. They weren't meaning to hurt me, but they weren't coping with what was going on, so they lashed out the only way they knew how. And that happens a lot in families, right? So the other thing I find really good too is actually journaling to get rid of the emotions. So if you had an altercation or a situation with someone and you go away and you're really angry or upset about it, I actually find if I pray and then just write it all out, just, you know, write out the whole thing that happened, get rid of the emotion out of it. And then as part of that process, I find God often gives me a little nudge on the shoulder and saying, well, Karen, he tells me a bit about that person that maybe I didn't know, or actually reminds me of something that I did know about it but had forgotten. And actually then when I've done that, I can actually then go back to that person and have a wholly different relationship than I had beforehand. Because I don't know about you, I'm quite an emotional person. I do wear my heart on my sleeve. So sometimes that doesn't help, okay? It does sometimes, but sometimes it doesn't. But I just want to give you a couple of examples from the Bible about how God does amazing... I hope you see these passages in a different light because they really help me. It's right at the beginning, Genesis 3:8. You know what happened in Genesis 3:8? The sin, the fall. Okay, so Adam and Eve and God were in perfect relationship with each other, weren't they, before that? They were walking together freely. They had every perfect relationship we'd all want now. That's how it was at the beginning. But then they took the apple. And anyway, so this is Genesis 3:8. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And they hid from the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord called to the man, "Where are you?" Well, he knew where he was. He answers, "I heard you in the garden. I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid." So this is a really interesting time. Basically, man has just done the worst possible thing ever. They've totally wrecked everything forever. It was going to be perfect, but they just were disobedient. They sinned. They just didn't want to, you know. My reaction to that sometimes, I read a bit more about it, is that, well, why didn't he just sort of get rid of them and start again? You know, he could have easily done that. He's God. He can start again. But he chose differently. And look at his interactions. The first one was a question, "Where are you?" The second thing he said after Adam said, "I hid," he said, "Who told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from?" They're very statements. They're what I call adult statements. They're not emotive. They're just questions. Well, you know, he knows the answer, but he doesn't say, "You naughty person, you stupid man, you should have," you know. He doesn't come across. He comes across as very amazing, of course. But, so he says that. And the man, he says, and to the woman he said, no, sorry. So the man said, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the eat tree and ate it." Here comes the blame game, okay. Then the Lord God said to the woman, what is it that you have done? So he didn't get involved in that blame and shame thing at all. He was very much, God was very coming very much from the questioning perspective, asking them, admitting, getting them to admit what actually happened. And as we know the rest of the story, but it's interesting that they had to accept the consequences of their actions. There was a punishment that they wouldn't be able to be in that relationship again. But look what happens. As I said before, God used data in this interaction. He could have just killed them and started again. He punished them by taking them out of the garden, but that was the natural consequence of their actions. But he found another way to bring mankind back into the perfect relationship. And it cost him everything. You know, he could have just gone and said, "Well, I'll start again," you know, made a mistake. But he chose to keep man and women as they were and actually then find another way to bring that relationship back. And that just blows me away when I actually look at this passage and think, that's kind of how we need to be with people. We need to give our everything. We need to help to bring relationships back together again as they were meant to be. And we can only do that with God. I just don't think I could possibly respond that way if it wasn't with God's help. I don't have it in me. I'm a human. I'm the sinner too. I still have that sin. The other one is the passage in Matthew 18:15-17, which is the dealing with sin in the church. This is really another passage I feel that sometimes gets kind of used in a way it's kind of a bit condemning, but it's not meant to be. It's that if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. So that's, you know, actually being there and actually sitting down, listening to each other, giving each other feedback and working it out. And if they listen to you, you've won them over, and then, you know, you can move on with your relationship. But if they do not listen, take one or two others along so every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. Now, this isn't a way where you just gather all your people that agree with you and come along and, you know, let's have a go at this person. It's not meant to be like that. It's actually about how do we, if sometimes when you're in a situation, you get a bit stuck. That's why restorative practice, I was talking about before, is between two people, but there's a mediator. There's someone who helps that facilitate it, because it's hard to do it on our own. We need someone else with a different perspective to be there to help us with it. But it says, this is where it gets a bit confusing. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Now, a lot of people think, oh, that means if they don't listen, then we just tell them to go and, you know, disappear off sort of thing, you know, just let them be. But actually, it's not. If you look through the whole context of the Bible, God actually says that who are we specially supposed to minister to and to witness to are the pagans, the tax collectors, the widows, the orphan, the aliens, the You know, because the actual other way of saying this is an alien is another interpretation of it. So I think he's actually trying to say we actually need to make a more of an effort to, for the people that we haven't managed to work our relationships with. I hope I'm not reading this incorrectly, but this is kind of what I have been praying and talking to God about, because I find that really an interesting view of it, that he's actually saying we actually need to spend more time with those people that actually we have had some conflict with or don't agree with. And I tell you what, I know for myself, things that I've had to do and deal with, that I think it has helped me change and see myself differently. And hopefully, as David said, you know, grated a bit on some of those rough edges and got them a bit smoother, and hopefully a bit more compassion and understanding to other people. Maybe not. I'm happy for you to give me feedback to say, hey, Karen, there's a few things you do need to know about. And that's what it's about. If we're in true fellowship together, we actually will be able to do that in our small groups, in our prayer partners, things like that. That's when we need to be really honest with each other, because how are we going to grow unless we're actually going to be really honest? So I hope that's been a bit helpful, not too confronting. I have to work this stuff out all the time. I'm not the world's expert, but I certainly know that, yeah, God is with us when we do it. So thank you.